It's almost like the New York City nightclub. There's a line out the door. Nobody can get in. More people want to be a part of it. There's an advantage in the beginning to being small because you can deliver so much more for your members.
You're listening to the Off the Charts Business Podcast. I'm your host, Nadia Lucier, and you just heard from Andy Guttormson. And he is the co-founder and CRO at Circle. He was on the founding team at Teachable and went on to co-found Circle in 2020. If you haven't heard of it, Circle is a community platform for creators and businesses with customers like Adobe, Webflow, Brendan Burchard, Pat Flynn, Modern Fertility, Harvard alumni, and 9,500 others. Let's get right into it.
Thank you so much for being here with us today, Andy. So I think there's definitely a bit of a vibe in the online space right now where people are on social media a lot and they're feeling maybe a little bit burnt out by social media, but they still want to connect with other people. So I think that's where community on your own platform really comes in. I'd love to hear examples of clients who have a big social following or who decided to move off of social for their business and into their own community platform.
One of my favorite examples that comes to mind is a woman named Dr. Becky. So Dr. Becky built a really great following of new parents who wanted to become better parents. And of course, with an audience, it's this like one-to-many relationship where you share content, you share ideas, people consume it. What's different though about a community is when you bring those kind of people in your audience together and they start to have a relationship with each other, it unlocks all of these different opportunities for you. And so as an example, Dr. Becky, she might have had an online course or she might have done a, you know, go Instagram live, and she does those things. And those are the things that really built her business. But when you look now, she's shifted and she's added on this community component where she has parents asking each other questions all day. And somebody might ask a question in a kind of live discussion forum and they might get 30 answers. And it's not Dr. Becky sharing her insights. It's the collective knowledge of all of Dr. Becky's audience together. But there's so many examples of that. Another one of my favorite examples is Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income. So Pat, of course, for years, he had a great YouTube channel. He has a great podcast. He has a great blog and all of that. But he realized that all of these folks who were consuming the ideas and the content, they had so much to offer too. And so all of a sudden he would bring these people together and it wasn't all this pressure on just Pat to be the one with all the answers. For every insight and kind of piece of wisdom that Pat could offer, he could create these experiences that would empower the people in his audience to deliver value to each other. And that came back to Pat 10 times over.
I love that you brought that up, that it's kind of that connection between everyone and the wisdom of each person coming together. And one thing I've noticed too with running communities over the past decade and a half or so is that you have people who are brand new to your community, and then you have people who've been along the journey with you for many years, and they sort of community or welcome new people in, like they're the ones who are sort of passing on your way of doing things in the community. And do you have any tips or ideas for how people can kind of nurture new members or kind of keep those long-term members happy?
Totally. So, you know, there's really two concepts that I think if you nail these concepts, it maximizes the likelihood of your community taking off, delivering a lot of value. So the first one is creating, so what we call signature gatherings, which is essentially the value prop. It's the thing that people get when they come into your community. And a lot of people think, oh, I need to do 10 different things. But really, if we look at the best communities, most of them have like these 2 to 3 signature gatherings. Now, a signature gathering could be something along the lines of, I have a book club, or let's say it's a writing community. I can share a version of my writing and get feedback once a week in the community from other people who are going through it. Or it could be I bring in an expert speaker once every 2 weeks, or I have office hours where I can come in and there's some type of expert, or maybe it's the person running the community, whatever. I can ask people a whole bunch of questions, but there's like 2 or 3 or 4 versions of that. And that's kind of like the offer of the community. It's what you get. The second thing though is, how do you onboard those members and really ensure that when they come in and they join your community, they stay around and they deliver. And what's so different about a community is that it's not just all the pressure on you as the person running the community. With a community, you're bringing in these members and they're actually making a commitment up front and they're committing to being a great member. And so there's some very actionable kind of tactical things I can walk through here about how to do that well, like the best versions of that. So Pat and Matt from SPI, they have this community, and when they bring people in, what they do is they almost treat it like college, right? So when you apply for college, they in some cases might talk to everybody one-on-one, but there's this thing of like, when I join the community, what if I get inside? I don't know what to do. I don't have any connections or whatever. So, you know, if you go to college, a lot of times what they do is they have freshman orientation. And when you have this freshman orientation, you might come a couple months early and see a bunch of people in your incoming class. You meet the faces and all of that. It's this amazing thing that they actually implemented for their own community, where what they would do is they'd bring all these people together, let's say 2, 3, 4 weeks before they're going to be entered into the community. And they would all get to know each other. They'd talk about like what they're going to do inside the community to contribute. They would say, here's what you can expect. And then when I get in the community, I know all the people in there. I'm much more likely to engage. There's friendly faces, all that kind of stuff. That's very thoughtful. So I get into the community and I might see a welcome video. And one of my favorite things is this new member challenge. If you go through, you do these things, then you'll get some type of prize, or, you know, we'll give you this gift or whatever it is. As an example, there might be a video where it's me, I'm welcoming you, I'm saying, you know, hey, here's where you can go and get X, Y, or Z. And what you really want people to do is consume some content and understand how to navigate the platform. That's the first thing. The next thing is you want them to get a win right away, which is oftentimes connecting with some other member in the community. And so you can help facilitate that. The other thing is you want the positive reinforcement of, oh, I made a good decision. That's the first thing people think about when they join, is like, is this a good, like, should I invest here? Even if I just bought access to a membership, it's still like a trial, right? Because we don't know, we got to retain that customer. So we have to get them to take action and get value right away. So the first thing you can do when you join that community is, of course, you're gonna ask people to go and introduce themselves and all of that. The better thing to do is actually maybe go in there and even make an amazing introduction for them. And you can talk, brag about them, kind of like use the authority that you have as the person running that community, give them some of that juice, you know what it is. And so that first 24 hours can really be make or break, actually, for whether this person is gonna come and be a contributing member.
I love what you said about going first and kind of being the one to introduce them, or kind of going above and beyond, and rather than just dropping them in and being like, okay, welcome, good luck. Yeah. And I think one of the issues with running your own community off of social media is that with social media, people check, like, say, Facebook all the time. Like, they already have that habit of checking social media. And so those types of groups or communities tend to be very active. And so you kind of have to train people to log into a different place, or to install an app, or do something a little bit different than what they're used to doing. And I love what you shared about those first 24 hours and making them so valuable that they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to check tomorrow, and I'm going to check the day after, and I'm going to make sure that I keep doing this because I'm getting value out of it. And I love also what you mentioned about Pat and his team, is that it's not just him. So I think sometimes when we think about communities, we think, oh no, like, it's another thing on my plate. And I think that people do hire community managers, and there's ways to kind of offload if it feels like a community would be too much work for you. So what tips do you have for either finding someone to be a community manager, maybe doing it yourself, or enlisting the help of other members in your community if you already have them?
Well, the point you brought up is so great. The idea of like almost creating advocates in the community, and people have different language for this. It could be moderators. You could have a full-time or part-time community manager on your team. It's really common. I love the idea of starting with a few folks. So when you just start your community, you're going to have founding members. My preference would be to take the first founding members and have, and it could be 30 founding members or 40 or 50, whatever it is. These are the people that are taking a bet on you. They're investing. There's nothing proven yet. And so you're almost kind of bringing them along for the ride and doing it with them. And I like the idea of setting their expectations that actually you're going to commit and you're going to be one of those advocates, and here's how you're going to contribute. And by the way, you're going to get a lot of these different elements, you know, in return, right? Because it's going to be a small group. It's almost like the New York City nightclub. There's a line out the door. Nobody can get in. More people want to be a part of it. Like there's an advantage in the beginning to being small because you can deliver so much more for your members. But I like the idea of taking those first founding members. Those are folks who are coming in and you're saying like, look, if so-and-so comes in and asks a question, we need to make sure that she gets at least like 6 amazing responses. I might sometimes send you a little DM or message or whatever it is and say, hey, go there and post and help her out. And you as the person running the community sometimes have to step back and teach others that they can come in and be the first person to share the feedback, give the idea, have an opinion. You know, in the beginning of starting these communities, it's almost like starting a fire. It's like you have to take 2 sticks and rub them together. It's really hard. But then what can happen is it starts to get a little bit easier, you get a little spark, and then it grows a little bit, and then you have a big flame, and that's what it's like in the early days.
Now we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Did you know Access Ally is the most flexible way to sell and elegantly deliver digital offerings as your business grows? All in one place on WordPress. You can create online courses, memberships, directories, and communities, and even sell team access, all on your terms. Go to accessally.com to get a demo and see why it's the business scaling solution you've been looking for. Welcome back.
I like that analogy too. And one thing I think maybe trips people up a little bit is the idea of charging for community. So you already mentioned the events and the pieces of community and the value that you're providing. But what tips do you have for people to decide on pricing their community? I know a lot of times we'll have like founders pricing and then you'll increase it over time and that kind of thing. What have you seen work really well for people?
You know, one of the projects we just did is we did probably the most comprehensive benchmark report around building communities because we surveyed thousands of people. We have 10,000, you know, paying customers on Circle. We have all this proprietary data of what's working, what's not working. But one of the biggest surprises was that the people who were doing really well, often they had 80 members in their community, but it was very premium, very high touch. And so to go to pricing, one of my favorite examples is a guy named Josh Hall. Josh Hall has a community for people who are designers. They are a lot of times helping, you know, build websites and things like that, but they're freelancers and he helps them grow their freelance design businesses. Everybody in there is getting so much value. Like they're learning how to go out and quote better, how to acquire new clients for their business. You know, just by being in Josh's community, you might get an extra client or 2 or 3 a month. And those clients could be worth $3,000 or $4,000 or $10,000 or $20,000. And so Josh might charge $1,000 a month. He might charge $100 a month for his other community. But the price is very tied to the value. And Josh serves a customer where he knows he can get them wins that command a higher price point. If you look at a lot of the communities, by the way, a lot of my favorite communities, one of my favorite communities is a cooking community from Miles Snyder. And I think it's something like $10 a month because, you know, I can't pay $1,000 a month to learn how to cook from Miles, but I could pay maybe $1,000 a month to learn from Josh how to go out and get another $5,000 or $10,000 client. And so I think you just have to think through what's the value prop? What are your signature offerings? And then think through how can I choose the signature offerings for me that are going to deliver the most value for the members. And by the way, you could just ask them. That's the best part about having those 30 founding members.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of doing research directly with your customers and asking them, what do you want? What matters most to you? How would this be valuable? So I love that you brought that up. So another question that comes up is if you have a big audience, then $10 a month is great. If you get a certain percentage of people to enroll, that can, you know, be a great business. And if you have a smaller audience, then charging a little bit more can also be great, because then, you know, you're still bringing in a lot without having to grow your audience huge. That kind of brings up the idea of churn, or how to keep people longer term. So what advice or things have you seen work really well for keeping people long term? And I know community is great at that, because people don't want to leave their friends, right? Once they make friends. But yeah, what have you seen in that area?
So I think this is one of the biggest challenges with memberships and communities. And the first thing, I know this isn't the direct question that you asked, but something I do like to almost give permission for is you can have communities that have a fixed amount of time, and there can be an end date. And sometimes that's all people need. In fact, some of the best communities that we've seen are ones that are 30 days, or they're 90 days or 6 months. One of my favorite examples of this is a community called Ship 30 for 30. The whole idea behind it is that there's this group of people, and it's hundreds of people or thousands of people go through it, and they're going to publish something every single day for 30 straight days. They're going to put themselves out there, and they're going to take a little bit of risk. You know what it's like to, I mean, you're a veteran now for, you know, 10 years you've been doing this, but when you're first publishing, it's really vulnerable. And so they bring a group together, and they're like, we have a much higher likelihood of publishing for 30 straight days if we do it together. So that's one of the most powerful communities that there is, and sometimes just okay to have an end date. If you're going to have an always-on kind of community or membership in perpetuity, you really have to deliver over and over again, which is a challenge. And I think there are certain types of signature gatherings and community experiences that you can offer, which are easier to do. So one example might be bringing in expert speakers is one example. So if I have a gardening community, I could bring in a different expert speaker about gardening every 2 weeks or every month or every week or whatever it is. The even better version of that is helping the members get value themselves, which can be elevating them. You can make them experts. Like, they could be the speakers. That's an even more community first approach to something like that. Another example would be to use tooling that can make it easier for you to show. So there might be prompts and things that you might do every single week. Those can be scheduled in advance. They're good for kind of like building the habit for people. And there's very like lightweight versions of that, which is like, tell me about like your biggest challenge this week, and then the whole community will come in and maybe help people and give them, you know, feedback or whatever it is. Or it could be something much more tactical and hands-on, which could be something like the example I gave earlier. David Perel has this amazing writing community where people will write these long essays, get feedback from the group. And so I think there needs to be a reason for people to come back every single month, and you should tie the way you deliver that should be tied to the type of like content experiences that are good, easier for you to provide every single month.
If you put your thinking hat on when it comes to this question, I think we can all come up with really good solutions that will support people in a community long term. But I like your thinking of making sure that it's a fit between what they want and value and get benefit from, and how you like to create or show up. And also using maybe some automation, like you said, some prompts or things like that, that can take a little bit of the edge off. Let's say when you are busy with a certain other aspect of your business, or you're busy doing the like actual engagement with people. So speaking of engagement, yeah, I would love to hear any other ways to foster some of that engagement in a community setting. I think that sometimes when you start a community, you're like, okay, like you said, you're rubbing two stones. You're like, how do we get it? How do we get people to open up? How do we get them to connect? So what tips or ideas do you have there?
There are a few different kind of categories of members. The first are like your hyper-responsive, hyper-engaged group. It's a really small group. It's like a few percentage points, right? And then there's the next group, which are people who they occasionally pop in when it's very relevant to them, where it's like a specific thing that they uniquely care about. Then there's the third group, which are lurkers, just people who are watching and consuming. The lurkers don't get enough credit, and the community leaders don't give themselves enough credit for the lurkers, because the lurkers are there a lot of times, like watching and consuming. And that to me is a form of engagement. It's just not one that's very visible. But when we all want active communities with a lot of visible engagement. I personally prefer a very methodical approach of layering on more signature gatherings over time. And that you could get to a place where if you look at some of the community examples I have talked about today, whether it's Josh Hall or it's Pat Flynn or it's Dr. Becky from Good Inside, what they do is they have like 6 or 7 or 8 different signature gatherings. And that way they make it so that everybody can kind of find 1 or 2 or 3 of them that are just good for them. And then they're okay if people don't do the other stuff. But the more signature gatherings you have, the more opportunity there is for somebody to opt in. One example would be Dr. Becky, where she has an online course, like cohort-based courses, like people who go through it together and they are sharing feedback, there's assignments and stuff like that, but they're not doing it on their own, they're doing it like with other people. That's a pretty high investment of time and you have to be very focused. But then she might have a less in-depth course, just like a one-off workshop, and she'll go live, she'll talk about something for 15, 20 minutes. It's all part of the same ecosystem, the same community itself. And I kind of get to opt in. And so, you know, if you can create more of those different experiences, I think that that helps. The other thing is very tactically, people need to be reminded about this stuff. So I prefer to use automation and tools, lots of reminders for people to come. You know, I like to get stuff on people's calendars very tactically. I think your community should be very mobile friendly, as an example. People need to just get the notifications on their phone. There's all of that stuff that the big social networks get right that we have a responsibility to try and get right too when we ask people to go into other spaces. The tactical stuff really matters too. That's almost like the opposite end of the spectrum of what we talked about earlier, which is generating more engagement by nailing the onboarding and the fit of the members and getting that kind of buy-in from them up front before they join.
Obviously, I'm a huge fan of automation too. And I think if we have a lot of members, some of them are going to fall through the cracks. If we don't have automation, especially, we won't even know that, oh, they haven't logged in or, you know, they've been checked out for a while. But I also do appreciate what you said about the lurkers, where they may still be consuming all the content and getting great value. They're just not going to, you know, hit reply to anything. And that's okay. You don't need to have everyone commenting all the time. And I think about different personality types too. Like my husband is like, I don't comment online. That's not a thing I do. Right. Yeah. Whereas I'm like, I want to be engaged. I want to let people know that I appreciate things or whatnot. So I think that's a really good distinction as well. And when it comes to
one other thing I forgot to mention that I think is really important too, is you may not see some of the engagement behind the scenes that you create. So a lot of times in these communities, there's private messaging and DMing and chatter and friendships that are developing. So there's like the public version to that, where people are posting, commenting, they're showing up to events, they're posting work, they're getting feedback on work. There's all of that. But then there's the DMs, and magic happens in the DMs. So if you can create the friendships and the connections between people, like one of my favorite examples, there's a human resources professional community where they kind of talk about all the tough HR problems they're having in their day-to-day, which you can't really talk about with other people. They'll go and then you'll see them, like they have private messages to, you know, talk about sensitive information and all of that. Like they build friendships there. A lot of that connection happens behind the scenes in your community too. But if you can connect two members with each other, that helps with the engagement. It also helps with the retention we talked about earlier.
Yes, I love that. When we onboard people, we're like, let's pair them up with a buddy. So I think that is a really great way to do it. And yeah, just not knowing about that DM piece, I think is huge because we don't see it. But if it's happening, then that's amazing too. It's a great connection piece. So I was going to ask you also, you mentioned this huge report at Benchmark that you did with over 10,000 communities that you're looking into. Was there anything especially surprising that came up out of that report that you think would be interesting for people?
The biggest one was the size of the communities. A lot of people think bigger is better. If you look at the communities that I know to be very well respected and kind of like beloved out there in the market, and their members love it, a lot of times the smaller the better. And I think in retrospect, I mean, that was a surprise, but in retrospect it makes sense, which is like if there's 50 people in the community, we all know each other a lot more. It's a lot more tight-knit, personal. I can deliver a lot more value. The other thing, which I was surprised about, so, you know, I spent a lot of time in the online course world before, and it could take so many months and months and months and months to create the course, make it really good, and go out to market with it. With communities, people are able to get started really fast, you know, in a few weeks. And I think it's because we're kind of like meant to do this, right? Like, we've all been doing this for thousands of years. Now we're just doing more of it online. But that was one. So another thing to me that was surprising is the amount of support that people had behind the scenes. So communities take work. You know, I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, this community will run itself, or it's just so far from the truth. They're a grind. Like, they take a lot of work, but it's the most transformational thing. But the other big learning was just the support people had behind the scenes and like how they structured it. And so for a lot of people, they didn't have a full-time community manager. Some of like the brands and bigger companies, you know, businesses did. But a lot of people have part-time help for their community just to go in and make sure people are getting prompt responses and to kind of just like run the thing operationally. And they're spending a couple $1,000s a month on that, or even less in many cases. And so that was a big learning. A lot of businesses that I thought were too small to even have help had help. And it was really cool to see how resourceful they were to go out and find help, and kind of inspiring to go out and like, hey, how else can we think about like delegating and getting other work?
That's so awesome. And yeah, I like what you brought up about a smaller community. So I think, you know, of Dunbar's number and how we're used to a certain limit of people in our minds, right, where we can keep track of relationships and people's personalities and all of the stuff we've talked about with them already. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I love that also about people being able to find some support around building their community, because they think, we talk sometimes about AI and things like that. And like, we talked about automation, but I think humans are still going to be a big part of communities, and we want that human touch. I think that's kind of what we really appreciate about being part of a community. So I love that people are, you know, being able to find those resources to help them, those human resources as well to do that.
100%.
Awesome. Andy, anything that you think people who are thinking of starting a community or maybe switching, you know, community platforms or things like that, that they should know about?
Well, we started Circle. There's so many unknowns, right? Like, everything is new. And community, I think it's a lot more well understood today than even 3 or 4 years ago. But the thing that I've never had more conviction around when I actually talk to the folks running these communities, people who have made the jump and they're connecting their members with each other, they're in the weeds talking to like real people. It's that community, I think, is more meaning comes with it. It makes the work feel a little bit better because you're a little bit closer to the outcomes that people create. And so I think there are so many reasons to do it. I think in business, you want to win, and it really is a competitive advantage. It really differentiates you. Like, folks who have a community component to their business and they do it well, they're really standing out. At the end of the day, nothing beats just Miles, who I mentioned earlier, has a cooking community, and just getting to see a bunch of people on a call learning and then holding up their food to the screen. Like, oh, I just made, like, you can't beat that. Like, that's real. I think it's a lot more meaningful way to do business.
I love that so much. And yeah, I totally agree. I think the human element is what makes it worthwhile. Thank you so much, Andy, for being here with us today and sharing so much practical, tactical, and really heartfelt advice. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love the show, so really appreciate it.
To get the show notes and links from today's episode, head over to natalielussier.com and click the podcast link. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications when new podcasts are released. Thanks for listening, and until next time.